Riverside Walk. Welcome to this Frugal Guide Dublin audio tour. I'm Corey Hansen, professional water gazer, aquaculture aficionado, and author of The Frugal Guide Dublin. If you have a copy of The Frugal Guide Dublin ebook, I suggest you follow along on the Riverside Walk map in the City Center North chapter of the book. The walking route is mapped out, and the stops on the walk are numbered for your convenience. If you don't have a portable e-reading device, make sure to have a hard copy map handy just in case you make a wrong turn. Let's see that river. More than Trinity College, more than Guinness, more than anything else, the River Liffey is the real centerpiece and defining characteristic of Dublin. While not nearly the largest river in Ireland, that honor belongs to the Shannon, by a wide margin, it is arguably the most important commercially and historically. Without this large, eastward-facing river mouth, early Irish Celts and their Viking and Christian successors wouldn't have settled here and built the city we all know and love today. From the bottom end of Capel Street, you can begin a nice stroll along this urban river, where some great sights await the penny-pinching tourist. Keep in mind that this is a very busy part of town for traffic and pedestrians, particularly around O'Connell Street. The best time for this stroll is early in the morning when the light is perfect on the river and the crowds are still in bed. About this walk. The full walking route follows the north side of the river from Capel Street to the Samuel Beckett Bridge and Spencer Dock. For an abbreviated stroll, distant views of most of the highlights can be had in a stretch from the Halfpenny Bridge to the Famine Memorial. The full walk from the bottom of Capel Street to the Samuel Beckett Bridge is 1.2 miles, that's 1.9 kilometers, and takes about 45 minutes, depending on traffic and street crossings. Between stops, feel free to pause this guide so you never feel rushed. We're here to see the heart of Dublin, so make sure to enjoy it. Go at your own pace, take lots of pictures, and do as much of the walk as you care to. If you get tired or need a break, we're never far from the tourist-friendly shops and pubs of City Center. First, take a look at the river itself. The Liffey, despite looking wide and deep here in City Center, is really quite a small river. It begins in the Dublin Mountains just a few miles outside of town and is the size of a small stream for most of its length. The wide river you see here is tidal and mostly seawater flowing in from Dublin Bay. Look for the high water mark on the walls to see where the river level is at high tide. There are two high and two low tides each day. It's always either rising or falling. If the tide is all the way in, the water nearly kisses the bottom of the bridges. When very low, try to ignore the many bicycles, shopping carts, and traffic cones stuck in the silt and mud at the very bottom. If you start from Capel Street, hop on the Liffey boardwalk and head downstream. Pause the audio guide now until you reach the shiny, pedestrian-only footbridge. This is Dublin's Millennium Bridge. In the late 1990s, Dublin sponsored a bridge designing contest as yet another part of its strange fascination with the year 2000. The winning design that you see here was built in one piece in Carlow, Ireland, and shipped here on a boat before being installed by crane. Look up river from the middle of the bridge as you bounce and shimmy with this flexible-by-design bridge. The pillared, green-domed building on the north side is the Forecourts, headquarters of Ireland's Supreme Court. Like many central government buildings, the Forecourts was an important strategic and symbolic stronghold for fighters in both Ireland's War of Independence and the immediately following Irish Civil War. On the south bank, farther upriver, the short, green-domed tower is St. Patrick's Windmill, originally built by a Riverside whiskey distillery. Today, it marks the location of the massive Guinness Brewery just across the street. Now, we'll be heading downriver to the next bridge, the white, arched bridge with the lanterns. Pause the audio guide now, follow the boardwalk along the river, and resume when you get to the next bridge. You're now standing near the famous Halfpenny Bridge. This bridge was built to replace a dilapidated fleet of ferries across the Liffey in 1816. To appease the operator of the now useless ferries, the city allowed him and his estate to collect the halfpenny, haypenny, toll from the bridge for 100 years. The contract was honored, and the bridge finally opened for free passage in 1916. It was the first, and for a long time, the only, pedestrian bridge in Dublin. Try to resist the temptation to put a padlock on the metal of the bridge. The locks build up, damage the paint, and cause weight capacity problems. Hop off the north side of the bridge and take a peek across the road to a very special statue. Dubliners have an interesting relationship with their monuments. They seem to respect their presence, but come up with derogatory, rhyming nicknames for them. The oversized statue of the two women on the bench with the Arnott's shopping bag is known lovingly as the Hags with the Bags. Cross back to the riverside and take the boardwalk to the big, busy O'Connell Bridge. When you get there, turn right and walk halfway across the bridge to a small plaque on the railing. We'll resume the walk when you get there. The central hub and main access point to the north side of the river is O'Connell Bridge, which opens to O'Connell Street. This spot has had a bridge on it since 1791, but very little remains of that original structure, including the name. Today, the bridge and the huge angel ring statue of a man who likely has a pigeon on his head are named for Daniel O'Connell, known as the Emancipator among the Irish. He was an early champion for Irish Catholic civil rights and independence in the British Parliament. It is the only traffic bridge in Europe that is wider than it is long. It's difficult to see from ground level, but the measurements can't lie. 147 feet, that's 45 meters, across the river, and 164 feet, that's 50 meters, from side to side. On the rail near you, take a look at the small bronze plaque. This is the infamous dedication to a farcical and fictional Catholic priest, the Father Pat Noyes Memorial. Read the inscription. He died under suspicious circumstances when his carriage plunged into the Liffey. This plaque was installed by some clever pranksters in the depression left by the control box of an ill-planned millennium countdown clock projected in green light on the river below the bridge. When the clock was removed following numerous visibility and electrical issues, this plaque mysteriously appeared one night. When it was noticed, the city council planned to have it removed, but public outcry demanded that this monument to a fictional character stay in place. There it sits today, more a monument to the tricky and irreverent Irish spirit than a revolutionary hero. Continue this walk with a complex series of road crossings. Go back to the north side of the bridge, cross to the middle, then cross to the base of the Daniel O'Connell statue. From there, cross O'Connell Street to the east, then cross Eden Quay back to the riverside and the boardwalk. We'll resume at the next bridge. Rosie Hackett Bridge is Dublin's newest, opening to pedestrian, bicycle, and public transport traffic in 2014. It may seem strange to have another bridge so close to two others, but this one has a special purpose. It is a public transport priority bridge, closed to private cars. It is also the crossing point of the extended Lewis Light Rail Line. The name, Rosie Hackett, was voted on by the citizens of Dublin to honor a 1916 Irish freedom fighter and suffragette. Follow the boardwalk along the river, noticing that it changes its angle slightly, opening up the view all the way to the sea. The next long limestone building with the green dome is the Custom House, very important in a time when much of Ireland's trade came through Dublin's docklands. Cargo ships coming into and out of the port had to register and pay taxes on everything in their holds right here. It was another important strategic building during the War of Independence and was burned down in an attempt to destroy important records and disrupt the English tariff collecting system. Note the rebuilt dome, made of darker stone quarried from Ireland rather than the lighter English stone of the lower level. Just past the Custom House, you'll see the brown, discolored bronze statues of the Famine Memorial. Pause the audio guide now and resume when you reach them. These gaunt people and one very bony-looking dog are a reminder of the horrible famine that wiped out a million Irish and forced millions more to emigrate in the 1840s. Each of these figures was modeled after a real person based on historical records of the time. Note the father carrying his dead child at the back, unable to let her go while the starving dog waits. Records show that all of these people made it safely to North America and found successful new lives in Canada. A similar memorial stands in Toronto depicting all of these same people, symbolizing the successful emigration of these and so many other Irish famine victims to Canada. On the ground around the statues, look for the names of donors who have helped support the Famine Commemoration Project, including Irish and American celebrities like Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Day-Lewis, and Bill and Hillary Clinton. Feel free to pause now to look at the statues and read the names. The area east of the custom house on both sides of the river is known as the Docklands. For centuries, this area was a busy port, importing and exporting goods from hundreds of ships every day. To aid in the loading and unloading of these ships, a series of inner docks was built away from the crowds of other ships and the always fluctuating tides of the main river. An entrance to one of these inner docks is at the big steel bridge near the Famine Memorial. This bridge is designed to swing open with very little energy thanks to the massive and scary counterweights hanging over the hinge of the bridge. Behind the bridge and the lock, ships could safely load and unload cargo in this little protected port. The iron and glass building next to this inner dock is called the Custom House Key CHQ building. It was originally built to store alcohol and tobacco for import and export until all duties and taxes were properly paid. From the sidewalk, the entrances to the massive arched underground vaults are still visible. Today, it's a mostly empty retail space with free public toilets and often used for temporary markets and festivals. Feel free to pop in if you need a break. If not, pause and resume when you reach the next pedestrian-only bridge. On your way, you may notice the smashed shells of mussels and other shellfish caught by seabirds and cleverly dropped from great heights onto the cement walkway to access the sweet meat inside. Watch your head. Named for one of Dublin's many famous writers, the Sean O'Casey Bridge is another bouncing, bucking, wobbly-by-design footbridge. It was installed in 2005 as an attempt to connect the previously run-down North and South Docklands during the surging economic boom of the Celtic Tiger. Growth has slowed somewhat, but the Docklands are bouncing back as developers have once again taken an interest in this low-cost, high-potential part of Dublin. The old sailing ship docked nearby is the Jeanie Johnston Tall Ship and Famine Museum, a replica of the kind of ship Irish emigrants would take to America, open as a museum to visitors. Farther downriver, see the white suspension strings of the unique Samuel Beckett Bridge. Ireland's national symbol of the harp inspired the design of this bridge, installed in 2009. The bridge rests on a huge ball and socket joint on the south side, and the whole bridge can rotate 90 degrees inward, upriver, to allow tall ships to pass to and from Dublin Bay. The bridge was built in one piece and brought to Ireland on a barge. To install it, engineers had to wait for a day with an unusually high tide. As the tide rose, the ball of the bridge was positioned over the socket of the base. When the tide went out, the bridge slowly set itself into the socket, using only the powers of buoyancy and gravity. From the last two bridges, you can also see the tilted glass beaker of the Convention Center Dublin and the distant cranes of the still busy Dublin port, now much farther east of city center. In the far distance, the twin smokestacks are those of the Poolbeg Power Station. These decommissioned chimneys are a classic Dublin landmark and are often used as establishing shots in films and television shows set in the city. Near the convention center, the Royal Canal meets the River Liffey at Spencer Dock. The canal was a commercial catastrophe and quickly went out of business, but it remains as a nice urban waterway for North Dublin neighborhoods. Read more about the Poolbeg Chimneys and the Royal Canal in the Beyond City Center chapter in the book. When you're ready, return to the riverside and walk back to O'Connell Bridge and the rest of the familiar streets of City Center. I don't recommend wandering through the rough neighborhoods north or east of Bus Aris. From the south end of O'Connell Bridge, take the right fork, Westmoreland Street, to get back to College Green and Grafton Street. I hope you've enjoyed the Riverside Walk. If you haven't already, find much more about visiting Dublin on the cheap in my free ebook, The Frugal Guide, Dublin. The book is available on Smashwords, Barnes & Noble, iTunes, and many other online ebook retailers. If you've used and enjoyed the book or the audio guides, why not leave a rating and review on your preferred ebook or podcast distribution service? It only takes a minute, and your reviews help more people find and enjoy this free Dublin travel content. For updates about Corey Hansen and The Frugal Guide Dublin, like the book on Facebook at facebook.com/frugalguidedublin. Follow Corey on Twitter at HansenCorey1, that's HansonCory and the number 1, and visit us over at 5suitcases.com. Thanks so much for listening, and enjoy the rest of your visit to Dublin. This audio guide and all Frugal Guide Dublin content is copyright 2014-2015 by Corey Hansen. This content remains the copyrighted property of the author and may not be redistributed to others for commercial or non-commercial purposes. If you enjoyed the book or the audio guide, please encourage others to download their own copy from their favorite authorized retailer. The Frugal Guide Dublin theme song adapted from the traditional Cockles and Muscles using Mario Paint Composer by Unfun Games.